Good day, everyone. Wow, it's a nice echo in this room. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. It is Monday. It is Eclipse Day. Did you watch the thing? Did you go out with the funny glasses on? I apparently missed it. I'm in the office. Catherine, who will actually be on the show one day, my landlady, the lady who runs this place, got glasses. So I went out there at, I don't know, 2 something, and I was like, oh, look, it's happening. And then I came back in, and I kind of kept waiting for it to be dark. So I kind of kept looking through the window outside, and it never got dark, so I never went out. And then I finally went out later at whenever I went out, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's already on its way out. So I hope you enjoyed it. Hope if that's your thing. I mean, I honestly didn't care either way. But since a bunch of people were doing it, and I had the glasses, I was happy to go out and look. Like, but it's not something I would have never ordered the damn things. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it. I apparently missed it. On today's program, Renee and Jennifer from Youth Spark. Now, if you read the description, if this didn't just pop up in your, you know, next podcast thing, this is a slightly heavier episode, I guess the term would be. We got into a really, I was going to say a pretty serious conversation, definitely a different tone than we've had yet on the podcast. And I even more so kind of want to bring it to you. Like I thought, wow, this is not something people talk about. And I kind of wasn't sure what we were going to get into, but it went how it went. And I think, you're going to learn a lot. So I don't think there's much more to say about it because you just need to hear it. And super open to feedback on this one. Would love to know your thoughts on it. And if you have any insight, I don't know. Just like, I mean, you're going to hear me be pretty blown away at most of the stuff they talk about. You know, I think a couple of times they say, wow, we wish you could, your listeners could see your face because I was pretty surprised. And I'm no prude. But I think that's it without, yeah, let's just get into it. Renee and Jennifer from Youth Spark, away we go.
Okay. My name is Jennifer Swain. I am the Deputy Director for Youth Spark. Youth Spark is a nonprofit agency that is aimed to end the commercial sexual exploitation of children. We have a youth service center inside of the Fulton County Juvenile Court. And so we really pride ourselves on serving on the front line, but we don't just rescue victims. We also work to create a world where it doesn't happen to anyone else. And so I'll just go ahead and pass it over to Renee, and she'll tell a little bit about what she does.
I'm Renee Shelby. I am the research director here at USpark. And so I kind of study the other end, whereas Jennifer does the victim services and is dealing directly with people who've experienced these issues. I research the people who perpetrate sexual exploitation. So my job sometimes puts me in very interesting, disturbing parts of the internet, but I make contact with people who buy young persons for sex.
You contact them?
I do.
You got to hold it a little bit closer. Just close a little bit closer.
I do. So within people who do research on sexual exploitation.
I'm going to shut this. Keep talking.
Yeah, sure. Whether that's academic or nonprofit or, you know, places like the Urban Institute, overwhelmingly people have done research on victims and left the buyer side really, really absent. There's just not a lot known about them. So in the past year or two, we've been working on different ways we can use technology to understand demand. So demand is the term that we use for buyers. So it's usually a passive system. I'll go on to websites like Backpage or Eros or Craigslist, sometimes even using social media, and we'll just put out a decoy ad and then wait for potential would-be buyers to contact us. And then we try to learn about their behavior so that we can reduce the scope of buying.
So I'm not a complete prude, so I know what these websites that you just mentioned are. For those that don't, it's mostly for sexual services. Craigslist used to be, I know, a lot bigger. And then after the whole Craigslist killer thing happened, they kind of tried to back away from it. I know people still use it. And then this thing Backpage became much bigger. But those ads for like for massage or sex, you're saying you actually say like we've got people for sale?
Yes. So, you know, when...
Because that seems so obvious to... I'm sorry to interrupt. That seems so obvious to me that someone would know, like, this is a cop. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, who would actually post people for... I would assume you'd have to go to much darker web places to find, hey, you can, like, bring... Is it bring a person over? Is it buy them? Like, can you just educate me and the people a little bit about it?
Yeah. So, you know, these... It's really bubbling at the surface. You know, people think it's kind of like in these corners of the dark web. But, you know, with just a few clicks, you can very easily find someone for sale and negotiate that price. I mean, as these main sites like Craigslist and Backpage are, you know, as the feds start to, you know, try to shut them down, it kind of has this, like, you know, if you were to, like, smash a glass and the glass just cracks and breaks, that the market kind of spreads to, you know, to different areas. So we see this happening now on Facebook, on Twitter, on Kik, on Snapchat, all places now that are very easy
to like,
access.
I'm like, people can't see me, but I'm kind of mouth agape. Even Snapchat, I could see that happening. I've never used Kik. I've heard of it. But, like, Facebook? Like, how do you even, like, pretend it isn't what it is and hope to not get caught?
Well, let's just sort of back up just one second. I mean, because your face, I wish they could really see it because you're giving us the shock face right now. But you kind of have to start with the notion that when you think about human trafficking, it doesn't happen in just the really horrific ways that you see on TV.
Right.
So most people, when you think about trafficking, you immediately think about Law and Order, right?
Of course.
Or the movie Taken.
Right.
You don't really think about children and young women and even young males who walk right beside us every day and that they are bought and sold for sex. So when you think about the issue of trafficking, one thing that you have to sort of realize overall is that trafficking happens in every single culture, in every single community. It just looks differently. And if you think about the basic laws of economics, if you take away the demand for a product, what happens to supply? It goes away.
Right.
No one's lining up anymore on Black Friday to buy VCRs, right? Because no one wants to use them anymore. So no one makes them anymore. But there's a very high demand for sex with young individuals for some reason. And one of the things that we've done at Youth Spark over the years is really look at the victims and how to have ways to help lawmakers and everyone realize that if you're under the age of 18, especially when the age of consent for sex is 16, you really can't consent to have sex, and no 13-year-old grows up and wants to be a prostitute. So when we really start looking at how to combat this problem, you can't just continue rescuing victims. You have to look at the other side while we have this problem, and that's how we start to look at demand. One of the really cool things that we did in 2010 was create a research study where we allowed buyers to just call in. And they really called in. It's called the Georgia Demand Study. And you can read the full research study on our website. But that was really the hallmark and beginning of all of our demand reduction work, because we didn't just pop up and start having all of these really cool technology products all of a sudden. Back in 2010, we put the ads out there, back when Craigslist was really one of the major players.
Right.
And what we found out was very, you know, astounding, because we created a study that showed us 7,200 men each month knowingly or unknowingly purchased sex. And one of the things that we recognize...
Is that all kinds or just underage or...
With young people, with prostituted individuals. Now, we can get into a conversation about adult consent, but just think about the word prostitute. When you hear that word, you think of the worst of the worst, right?
Right.
If you're really honest, there's nothing nice about it. You don't think of a victim at all. You think of an adult making a choice. And so we don't use those terms when it comes down to minors, because minors don't have the capacity to do so. That's why you can't vote until you're 18. You can't drink until you're 21, because we know that our brains can't handle certain situations.
So this study, these people, they willingly...
Okay, I'll tell you. So what happened is when we put the ad out there...
So first of all, I just want you to know, like, I'm already, like, super emotional. I did not expect this, like, at all. Like, I have kids, right? Sorry, like, I did not expect this at all. I mean, my kids are young, but, like, I have a daughter, so it's like...
Yeah.
This stuff's, like... And I gotta say, like, I know this is kind of off track, but, like, your business name, is that intentionally not very, like, you would think that's what you guys do?
Yes and no. I think...
Like, I have no idea that this is the kind of work you're doing. Even though you've told me, not that you should have some fucking neon sign, but, like, Youth Spark is like, hey, we do neighborhood stuff with kids. You know what I'm saying? And, like I don't know why this is making me so emotional today, but oof.
Well, we're glad because we think that when people really understand it, because the prostitution industry in itself is really highly glamorized. It's really built so that people don't think that there's a victim. It's almost like a victimless crime. And that's how buyers really look at this, as though, oh, they wanted it. It's okay.
Right. Well, so I'm 45. I don't know how old y'all are. I won't ask. I don't ask women's ages typically. Okay. So when I was a kid, right, like porn was this disgusting thing. Like you could get it on VHS and that was it. And in the last, I don't know, would you say like 10 years, maybe 15? It's absolutely glamorizes reality shows about it. People like want to be associated with it. I mean, that's a bigger question about the whole culture. But yeah, even the word porn star does not mean what it used to mean.
No, I think that's definitely true. And with those kind of media images miss is the violence that happens in sex buying. So there's just been countless studies that just show that this is one of the most violent, you know, interaction situations that that a person can be in. And when I say violent, I mean the buyers are violent towards the women, the young girls, the boys that they're buying. It's almost 100% chance that if a prostituted person is going to experience they're going to get beat up. They're going to experience sexual assault. There's a high chance that they just might be murdered. So through all that glamorization, I think it just really misses the dark side that really characterizes a large part of it. And sure, there's probably a portion, of adult transactions that they don't experience that, but that definitely doesn't characterize the vast majority of the sex market, and certainly for young people who are even more vulnerable, who are likely to even be in the sex market because they've experienced trauma or severe economic inequality, like prior victimizations that just make them very vulnerable to this.
So you were going to tell me these 1,700 people, so you put the word out for like anonymous, or you tricked them into it? Or
no, we didn't trick them, and a lot of what we do is not designed to blackmail anyone. And when Renee talks about some of the work that she's really engaged in right now, people oftentimes wonder, well, what do you do with this now that you know? We don't hold this over anyone's head. We really use the notion that when people, especially men who purchase, are aware that people are watching and that there is some accountability, they typically won't do it again. So back in 2010, what we did was that we put these ads online and we basically advertised a young person, sex for sale. And one of the things that I learned early on in this work that was the most shocking to me was if you put an ad online and it says free sex, come and get it right now, all you want, this ad is going to get a certain amount of clicks. But if you put an ad right next to it that says barely legal, young, petite, cutesy, sexy with three X's, flirty, those very young terms, this ad over here is going to get 300 times more clicks than a free sex ad, because there is something about purchasers that really want something young. So when we placed these ads out here, we realized halfway through, when men were just calling in, we realized that they're sort of acting willfully ignorant. And everyone knows that this is not just the pedophiles in the park. This is not the creepy guy that's walking around looking for a 13-year-old or trying to get a 7-year-old to, get in their van for some candy. This is a guy that really does not fit that mold. And what happens is that they'll click the ad and then they'll say something along the lines of, well, what's the youngest you got?
That's the first thing they say?
Or they start to inquire about the services. And what happens is, somewhere through the call, we had to stop that research study and embed another set of warning signs so that we could really understand, hey, does this caller recognize that they're going to get a young person? Do they want a young person and they're just sort of not saying it? Are they acting willfully ignorant? So what we did was that we embedded three warnings in that first study, where basically we alerted the caller that the person that you're attempting to purchase is underage. The first warning went something like, well, they're really young. The second warning went to, no, they're not quite 18. The third warning was, absolute, this person is underage. And 53% 47% went through all warnings, right? 47%, even when they knew they were going to, even though they didn't call in, most of them are not going to ask for a prepubescent child. They know that that's against the law. They don't associate with the pedophile range. So when they call in and we embedded those warnings, 47% went through all three warnings. And they said, we're going to purchase anyway, even when they knew that they were getting a child.
When you say purchase, I'm mm-hmm. like that word is kind of throwing me off. Like this is not... So it's not like I'm paying for an hour. This is I'm purchasing a person?
It's almost like it, and I can share with you some of the transcripts that we wrote from those calls because it was almost like ordering a pizza. Well, what's the youngest you got? Do you have any black, white, Asian? I'm in town for the weekend. Can I keep her for 3 weeks? Can I keep her for a week? If I like her a lot, you know, it really is like a market where you would order.
But in real life, is that what happens? Like, if we look at, like, let's call it, like, the stereotypical hour, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to come to your hotel for an hour. I'm going to leave. This is a young person that somebody is in charge of. There's some sort of pimp somewhere or whatever. I don't know what word y'all use. Mm-hmm. Who sends them there. And if the guy says, I can keep him for a week, it's just like, all right, I'll be back in a week to come get her. Like, this is, like, so mind-blowing to me.
Well... It happens in that way, and it doesn't happen in that way. So hotels and motels are really one way that one avenue in which young people are exploited. So some people, again, it happens in hotels and motels. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's in calls. Sometimes it's out calls. Sometimes even in that first research study, buyers were telling us where they lived. Buyers gave us their credit card information. There was almost no perceived fear or consequence.
So then do you say, by the way, this was just a study, thanks, and maybe you should watch yourself? Is that what happened or no?
Not in 2010, we didn't do that. But now that it's a version of what we do now. So with Demand Tracker, we've now expanded on what we learned in that study back then. Because in 2010, we realized we have two ways to attack demand. We need to make sure that we educate people that even when you buy, you better make sure it's not a young person because Georgia law doesn't care if you didn't know her age or not. It's your responsibility. That's Georgia state law. But for the other 47%, that's a matter of law enforcement. You have to really encourage and empower law enforcement to go after those that even when they know they're going to purchase, that they're going to do it anyway. And that's sort of what led us to the demand tracker work.
Yeah, so the demand tracker work is a way to promote community accountability around sex buying. So, like when we were just talking about, you know, trying to empower law enforcement, right now, who is likely to get arrested in the sex market is really skewed. You know, it's, you know, like 90-95% the prostituted person is going to be arrested and not the sex buyer. So,
you don't use the term John.
John, too.
I just personally don't like the term John because I know too many nice guys.
Name John.
And it's really not fair that the woman or the young person experience the labels of prostitute, slut, whore, bitch, all these horrible things that these women have to encounter. But the guy is like a cool guy named John or a pimp is just
well,
so
but,
cool.
But not in SVU land. Those of us that we talked about that like that, they always are like, how are we going to catch... I'm going to catch this perp. That's always their thing. And I thought that is kind of what happens. Like you hear about stings, you know, massage parlors or whatever. And they're like, they arrest the madam or whatever. But then they also catch all the dudes that were there.
So I like the term sex buyer and demand. We use this word a lot. And there's lots of our partner organizations across the country also use this term to kind of emphasize that this is like an economic market in the supply and demand aspects of it. And that if you can just reduce demand, even just a little, especially for those high frequency buyers. So high frequency buyers that have bought in the past week, the past month, even the past year, only account for 25% of the entire sex buyer market. That other 75% are people who maybe buy once, twice in their entire lifetime, or maybe they're just kind of opportunists if, a bachelor party or a business trip comes up, you know, if there's some kind of circumstance, some opportunity for them, they'll buy. But that 25%, those high frequency buyers, account for almost 80% of the sex market. So that small portion is just really driving this market. And they're actually the ones that we want law enforcement to pay attention to because they're the ones that require that kind of law enforcement intervention. That other, you know, the low frequency buyers, or, you know, maybe they experience a deterrence and don't become a high frequency buyer. I don't want to say there's just only those people only maybe buy once or twice. There might be some other intervention that prevents them from becoming that. But those are the ones that we're concerned with in our demand tracker system, a way to kind of promote community accountability, promote conversations around, you know, saying, sex, did you know that, you know, there's minors in the sex market and that the person you might be buying is this? Or did you know that the rates of violence are extremely high in the sex market? It seems like a lot of people, if they're just educated a little bit on what the realities are, can change their attitude towards sex buying, and that can have.
But how do we know, like, just through, I don't know, email or IM? Like, that's what we're going? Because we don't know. How do we know they don't come back in a week or a month? Or
so we've developed a system, and we're using it across the country it's a passive system using technology to identify how many times someone is buying. So we'll place a decoy ad out, and then we'll get responses back to that decoy ad. And then we'll analyze those responses. So we'll know, you know, who's contacted us and how many times. And, you know, we've had some people contact us. I think the highest is 119 times.
Same person.
The same person contacting different ads, you know, that are put out by the organizations that use this. So it's the people who use this are law enforcement, nonprofits, 501c3s, other non-government organizations.
So like you share like the ad or the data or whatever.
So we share the data. So the ads are put out by different groups, different organizations, but the data is funneled in one place. And this is a way to help us identify those high-frequency buyers, the violent buyers. You know, one person that we discovered last summer who had been trying to recruit young girls to our decoy ads had open human trafficking charges against them. And it was a state in the Northeast. I forget which one. But Maryland. You know, but those are the kinds of – it's like that person is coming down to Georgia to try to, you know, recruit and exploit vulnerable people here. So – we find out a lot when we look through, when we analyze, you know, the messages that are coming in.
It's okay. I'm just sort of, if I can be a good sort of example, or I forget what the term is, for the average person. Because again, I'm no like prude, like what? People go on the internet for sex? Like I'm not, you know what I mean? So that kind of, but I guess the people that go after the underage people, I think we do, you know, including me, do label a certain way, like the pervert with the van, and they must be the exception because most people want, I don't know, quote, regular people, not children, not under. Anyhow, so that's, I think, what's so disturbing to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest myths is that there's two sex markets, one for minors and one for adults. And the people who are purchasing in the adult market are, you know, just two consenting people, you know, doing their own thing, and everyone should just back off of that. And then the people who are purchasing in the minor sex market are the ones that we should really go after. But it's one blended market, and young persons are exploited in that adult market. And, you know, I want to be clear that, you know, we are not all – like, we are not sex negative. We're not trying to, you know, say that.
So you're saying you don't feel like there should be a crackdown on, like, the massage parlors that are all adult oriented, or you're saying you can't mix, you can't undo them because sometimes there's both.
Yeah, they're typically caught up in that. And so, okay, let me make the story really real. Because again, we have not only do we do this amazing work over here with Renee, but we also have a youth center. And we also started in 2000 with the first safe house in the Southeast region of the United States for girls who were under the age of 18. And what would happen just 15, 18 years ago, what would happen is that young girls, like a 12-year-old, would get locked up in handcuffs, and she would go to jail, and she would go before a judge in juvenile court and with a prostitution charge.
That's horrible.
How can you have a 13-year-old
right
with a prostitution charge? And the pimp got arrested and got off with a $50 fine. The man who purchased her, the men who purchased her, they rarely ever even got arrested. It was almost like a, oh, he didn't know, and just it was okay for him. But the young girl got put in handcuffs.
Do you think that's a conscious choice by the system?
It was because the system didn't know any better just a few short years ago. So look at how fast this movement has grown. A few short years ago, we really used the term child prostitute. People thought it was totally okay to say that, oh, she's a prostitute and she's 14 years old. And we have to say, okay, wait a minute. Let's think about this.
Right.
Logically, by the law.
Right.
But we have had young girls that we've worked with in several capacities over the years. Some girls who really needed a safe haven. Back in the day, pimping was a really what you would call like the guerrilla style of pimping. You know, they would beat you, they would snatch you, put you in the car, they would trunk you. I mean, they had the fear inside of you. Now you have more of a sort of a organic type of pimping style where it's what we call the finesse pimp. You know, the guy that's going to make you fall in love with him. And then you're going to have the Stockholm syndrome. You're going to fall so in love with him. And there's sort of like that mental bondage.
He buys you nice things.
Not even just he buys you nice things. He just makes you fall in love with him. And when you have any time that you have a presence of vulnerable children that don't have what they need, children that lack adult accountability. We have a lot of children in Atlanta. We have a huge homeless and runaway population and kids who've just been thrown away. And I hate the term throwaway because no child should ever just be out here in this world with no one to love them, no one to wake them up in the morning for school, no one that cares about them. But we serve those kids every day through our youth center. So I can't deny the work and the validity of the work and how important it is when I see children who've been caught up in this adult market. I've seen young girls who work with older boyfriends. They come through the court because they run away from home for 2 months and they haven't gone back to school. And when they come through the probation department, the probation officer figures out that they have a 27-year-old boyfriend. And it's like, but he loves me.
Right.
He was there for me when I was getting molested. He was there for me when right. no one cared about me. And he taught me how to take care of myself. And now we're getting money together. And this is just what I have to do. So they don't always know the difference. And so I've had young girls that have come to me with tears in their eyes saying, I know that you've been telling me about how to stay safe, but he told me how to create my Hotmail account. He told me how to click the button and upload this photo to Backpage. He told me how to say that I was 18 years old. So there's always someone driving it. And I don't want to really get caught up in the victim side of it too
right,
much because you're going to always have different types of victims. But pimps today don't even look like what you think they look like, right? When you think of a pimp, what you got? Right.
Fly.
Oh, you got to have a purple suit, right? With gaiters. You got to have like a long fur coat and like a pimp cup and rims spinning and all these different things. But to be honest, like what if I told you that I was a pimp? What if I told you that I do this work because it was very easy for me to walk into a mall and get a bunch of 14-year-old girls and I tell them the story about all the rappers that I know and I tell them a story and I'm in my shiny blue Mustang, I have my red bottoms on and I tell them that we really just need some bad bitches to be in this video and I think that you're amazing. Don't worry
this is,
about
this is what
me.
You did?
What, do you believe me?
I do.
I didn't. I didn't, but I...
But that's the move. That's,
and it's so easy for them to trust me now. So... Even the man's market knows that a woman is easier. So they send their women in to get younger girls because
so
I can make this girl trust me.
So it's come be in this video. And then once they get to wherever, it's, well, that's not going to happen today, but...
Or it happens, but now that it's happened, we're going to go to the after party. And now that it's, now we're at the after party, let's have some drinks. Come on, let's go to the strip club. Let's make it rain. I mean, Atlanta glamorizes this making it rain strip club life, right?
But it's not what it was, though.
No, it's absolutely not what it was. And at the end of it, it goes, well, you can choose to stay and engage, or I can lock the door. Because now you're in the situation.
Right.
No one knows that you're here. So then I can make all types of threats. I can lie to you. I can give you false promises.
I can drug you, whatever.
I can do anything I want. But again, they trust this because I look seemingly like I'm okay.
Right.
I sort of tricked you a bit, right?
I was like, well, I wasn't sure at first. I was like, is she being, well, but like, how long have you lived here?
In Atlanta?
Yeah.
For 10 years.
Okay. So again, when I grew up here, like Atlanta was like the spot, right? Mm-hmm. Like white, black, whatever. Like we had like a gazillion strip clubs, and we still do. No, not as many, right?
No, we still do. We have still.
But remember on 41, they're on Highway 41, which is technically Marietta, and then they finally were like, "Hey, wait a minute, this is kind of suburban land, and we don't want this to happen anymore." But there used to be a lot more. The gold room was the Gold Club. All those ones on 41.
Yeah, I mean, they're still here.
Anyway, there was a lot more.
I have friends now that come into town, and the first thing they ask me about when they get here, even though they know what I do, the first thing that they ask me about is, where's Magic City? Where's Pink Pony? Where's Cheetah? I hear this is the place where it's celebrated. I mean, think about it. Back in the day, if you were a stripper, you would go to the other town, right?
Right.
And you would strip, and you would get your money, and you'd come back, and you didn't want anybody to know. Now, it's almost sort of like this empowered, cool thing to be. Now women have birthday parties in strip clubs. Now couples go to strip clubs together. It's not this dirty, seedy place that it used to be. So when you have a community that really glamorizes the sex culture, and you think about the music, everything tells you to be sexy, like Make It Rain, strip even more, bust it open.
Well, that's like, and again, something with kids that has, because my kids listen to pop radio, and I have no like, cursing's fine. We curse in my house. People think it's funny, whatever. We just made a decision a long time ago that wasn't, if they know not to do that at school and not in front of mixed company, we're fine with it, right? They go, but when they're, so my kids are like 10 and 8 and 4, and they're singing song, they don't even know what these words mean.
Exactly.
And these are on regular radio. This isn't bleeped out. This is just like, sometimes they'll ask you, like, what does that mean? And that, again, like, as a parent, you're like, like, that's not quite sure that I'm okay with that. I wanted to get back to asking you, though, what was my question about? So when the Craigslist thing went down, right, at first it was like, hey, we're just this ad thing. You can't blame us because we're just the service. And then I guess they eventually were afraid they were going to get sued or whatever. So now it's like harder. So do you guys work with the Back Pages of the world and these other prostitution websites to be like, hey, like, how to, or they just can't keep up with the demand of, because Craigslist did something, right? Like, they must have done something to slow it down, right?
Well, they basically shut down what they call their escort services. They used to have a whole portion of their site dedicated to escort services. And what they did was they took that down and they said, you know what? First they said, okay, instead of just allowing people to put up an ad here and do what we know that you're telling us they're doing, we're going to now regulate it, and we're going to put it up for $5. So now you have to pay $5 to put an ad up here, and we're going to use that $5 to pay someone to help make sure that if any young people are being caught up in this, then we'll report them to the National
Center. And you're shaking your head no, like there's no way that was happening.
Right. Right. I mean, if you think realistically, they were just making money. Like, they were making a large amount of money themselves, and kids were still being bought.
So what's their stance now?
Well, it's such a ruse. So, you know, this, what you're talking about is actually happening to Backpage right now. So if you don't know, Backpage got, quote, shut down in January because the feds raided them for allowing minors to be exploited on their site. Their CEO went to jail.
What did he claim? Because that's like,
so they've, so there's something called the Communication Decency Act, CDA, and this is the, you know, this, the CDA came out in the 90s, and it's essentially, you know, when the internet emerged, that it was a way to see, you know, like Google or Yahoo, you know, like they're not necessarily responsible for what content its users put up. So it was, you know, the idea was that, you know, if there's something bad on the internet, you could just go after the host or, you know, the internet, some actor within the internet, and to hold them accountable when it was not really their fault. And so this is what Backpage has always claimed, and Craigslist and others, is that, you know, hey, it's not us, it's the users. We're going to be the sheriff, you know. This is the phrase that Backpage has always used. We're the sheriff of the trafficking on the internet, and we spend so much money to make sure that there's not kids. But actually, just the other, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, they just found these documents that showed that Backpage was hiring contractors overseas to, you know.
Hey, my phone keeps ringing, and because I'm meeting people later today, let me quickly, okay. Just hang on one second. Go ahead. Okay, they were hiring these contractors to do what?
So they hired the contractors overseas to, they would post ads on other sites that Backpage owned. It would ultimately drive the traffic back. But they haven't released, you know, the classified document, but from the reporting on it, what it appears is that Backpage was hiring these contractors to help promote underage prostitution and minors, and was trying to drive traffic to the site.
I can't believe that so these guys friendly. Started that site to do that, right?
Well, I mean, we can't necessarily necessarily say that they started it to
Well, we know, like, we know Craigslist wasn't, right? We know Craigslist. Backpage, honestly, for me, like, that's all I think about with that.
Right.
Is
no
that,
one was going on Craigslist, I mean, Backpage to buy a couch right. like you would for Craigslist.
Right. Craigslist, right? And so, like, when they realized, oh, here's this opportunity, then maybe they're like, we can make a little money from it, whatever. But Backpage is, like seedy to begin with. Again, like, but...
Based on the
but
name.
The whole under but the whole underage but
based
the,
on the name of the back pages, you know, if you have like
right.
if you open the Creative Loafing and you
right.
flip to the back pages.
Right. Well, one, by the way, once upon a time Creative Loafing was like this thick cuz advertise cuz like there was a lot more and there was those like there was 75 back pages. But anyhow, and even now though, dude, I got to be honest, like I'd never looked at Creative Loafing online and I did recently and like the first banner at the top was like a strip call. I was like, "Come on, Creative Loafing, that's all you can get." Come on, Creative Loafing. But I was going to say that okay, they want to make money from the adult industry, but the like I guess I'm just so like naively stupid that like, yeah, well, let's just go after underage people.
I think it highlights this issue that is persistent in the commercial sex market, whether that we talked about briefly touched on like massage brothels earlier. Which function in their they have exploitation in a whole different way. It's like each form, yeah. But there's still lots of exploitation happening there. There's actually just a bust last month in Chicago of these Johns who were, you know, coordinating bringing people over overseas, controlling where they were, and we're profiting from this. But, you know, a lot of people just say we need more regulation. You know, regulation is going to solve this issue. We just make it legal and then we regulate it like any other business. And
that's not the answer. Why? Tell people why that's not the answer.
Luckily, we have data on that. So there's a ton of data on it. So, you know, these European countries.
I'm like rolling all over your floor here.
That have, you know, just flat. We're just going to flat legalize the sex market, have actually seen an increase in the rates of trafficking, of violence. An explosion in the size of the sex market, like the no regulation model doesn't help at all. What does help is the quote Nordic model. So that this is an approach where selling sex is legal, but buying sex is illegal. And
how does that work? I mean, why is that the best way?
So it goes after demand. And it doesn't target the vulnerable prostituted person. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but I mean what you find when you do interviews with prostituted persons is that 97% would like to do something else. They just lack meaningful economic alternative opportunities. And if they had them, they would not do this any longer. You know, it's only the 2-3% that's that quote, like, happy hooker mentality. People
do you think that? Do you think that would work here?
I think it would work. So we're starting to see movements for that. Oh, the third component of the Nordic model is you take the fines, you know, from if you arrest a sex buyer and you use that to fund victim services for the prostituted person. So that helps them, you know, start to get the resources that they need. And it holds the person causing the harm accountable. And that countries that have implemented this model have seen a reduction in trafficking, and a reduction of violence, and a reduction in the size of the sex market. I think it helps, you know, get those people who are most vulnerable, who don't want to be there, out, and provides a system to fund that level of victim services.
And sometimes what, like, you have to remember is that in a lot of places, especially other countries, not just here in the U.S., in other countries, it's less honorable to not provide for your family than it is for you to not sell sex. And when you have a bunch of men coming from the Western world that have money and they have resources and they offer this to you, it's almost like a high-level understanding that how can you expect this woman who has nothing or expect these people who have nothing to not accept and do this because they have to eat. You have to survive. You have to live. And if someone's offering you $100 to do this, then it's less honorable for you to not take that than it is for you to engage in the sex act. So the Nordic model, I think, is one that was very hard for me to wrap my head around, because I wanted to know why would you ever make it okay for someone to do this? But then when you realize and you understand how it's driven and how the framework works, is that if you, again, no one could sell if no one wanted to buy. Like, not even a kid themselves. Like, let's just say a kid was lost. And this is not about sex when it comes to a young person. They don't love sex. Now, they don't even know what it's really designed for between two loving people and a marriage and all these other things. You know, they're looking at it as a means to an end. And so they need to eat. And this is what's normal. So I want to give you like a real life sort of today scenario. When people call, not when they see a prostitute on the street, or when they see a prostituted woman, or even like a trans woman, and they call and they see that they're engaging in this activity, they'll call the police and they say, what? There's prostitutes all over my street. I don't want this. I don't want to see it. And what happens? The police responds to the community members' calls. So when you have community members who are outraged by the entire issue of prostitution and commercial sexual exploitation, and they go in and they're calling because they want it cleaned up, and they may be well-versed that this happens to kids, but they call in and they report the woman or the trans woman or the young male. They don't report the guy that's circling the block 45 times, you know, with money, you know, all the time in his business suit. They don't hit all of those guys. And so there was an issue, and there was a story in the paper not too long ago with the Midtown Security Alliance, and they had all these calls of families and homeowners calling because they're saying, now we have a presence of trans women over here.
Oh boy.
And it's like, okay, so now I walk out of my door and I call a trans woman and a man having sex on my balcony, on my patio. And I walk down the street and we're stepping over used condoms and we see them outside having sex. They're outraged and they're like, do something, damn it. Like, what's the problem? And what happens is that we have a conversation with APD and we sit down with them and we say, you know, there is an increased violence against trans women, but yet there is an increased demand for sex with trans women. And we have to have both of the same conversations. And when we really look at the trans population and we see, okay, why are they actually doing this now? Like, why wouldn't they just hide this, right? Why wouldn't they just go into the hotel room, right? The truth is, because the buyers have no perceived consequences, the buyers themselves feel like they're powerful and that they have the money and that they're untouchable, they've now increased their violence against these women. And what they do is they have sex with them and then they rob them and they take their money back. They have sex with them and they rape them. And what are you going to do? Call the police?
Right.
I just turned a trick and he didn't give me my money?
Right.
Like, you're not going to get any response because that in itself is illegal. So what we had to say to APD is, and the APD is well aware, we don't want this to look like we're going after trans women, but we have to go in and arrest. We have to do something. And what we have to do then is empower them to do reverse things. And that's where you go after the buyers. And when you go after the buyers, then the women themselves, but when you arrest a trans woman and then now she's in the system and she has to pay $300 a month for her probation, you're forcing her once again to engage in sex acts to get the money that she needs, because nobody really wants to hire a woman with a beard, right, in the drive-thru. Nobody really wants to see that. So unfortunately, we have a situation where there's no viable employment opportunities for these people. There's a high demand for sex with them. But yet, what are we supposed to do to keep them from engaging further? And that is where we work alongside law enforcement, and we educate the community to say, you can't just cry, hey, arrest this prostituted person. You have to be educated. And when you call in, start telling about that Benz that keeps circling the block. Because again, every time he circles the block, he picks up someone. Maybe if he stops driving by, you'll stop seeing the activity. And people just have to shift their thinking. And it really comes from a good place, because they want to help. They want to see this not happen. But if you don't understand that you have to go after the buyers and it's not just about rescuing women, then we'll be rescuing women and children for years and years and years to come. So it's very new that USPARC and all these other agencies across the U.S. are really looking at how to curtail the buying market. Because everybody can save a victim, right? You're gonna give me a donation after this because you have a kid and you're now like, what the hell's going on? And you're gonna want to just not see this happen. See, most people can accept that it happens to a kid. I mean, they can accept the heartbreak for that. They don't want to look at, is it really your homeboy that's buying? Is it the guy that works in the co-working space with you? Is it the guy that is your doctor? Is it the guy that's sitting in your church when you sit in church service? These are not like the creepy pedophiles in the park. This is somebody's son. This is somebody's husband. And one of the things that we did when we really looked at the research report in 2013 on how males are victimized is that really young men are being paid to have sex, and they're not being paid to have top dollar for the sex act. They're paying for these heterosexual men to keep their secret safe, right? The largest purchasers of young boys are straight men.
Right.
And you're not paying the top dollar for the sex act like you would think. You're paying top dollar so that they keep your secret.
Right.
So you can't stop the problem unless you go after the demand. And I recently just sort of started really looking at, because I have a heart for all young people. So I really want to think about not just the girls and the prostituted young people, but what makes a buyer want to do this? Like, where did you grow up? Where did it turn for you that says that you have the right to own this person and that you have the right to be able to do this? But you brought up a great point and you think about porn. Before, you'd have to sort of get your mom and dad's VHS tape, right? Or you pull the magazine out. It's like jackpot. You and your buddies are all looking at this magazine. Now, if you Google porn, you're going to see the worst of the worst. You're not going to see just missionary style going at it. You're going to see the worst of the worst. And when you have young people looking at this and their sexual appetite is being built off of this, you're not going to be able to engage in activity that will satisfy you in that way. You're going to have to pay for someone to do these things that you sort of gain this appetite for. So it's a very new space for me as I even take a step back and start to even look at sort of how buyers and how young men are looking into this, because
no one's talking to those young men and saying, this is what healthy sexuality looks like, you know.
Right.
This is, you know.
How and we can't do that.
Other people or yourselves, you know, people just don't have those conversations with young men or women often, you know, we're in the absent.
And when we do it,
you know, people aren't engaging these young people in, you know, how the...
You might not have heard anything you just said, I hope. No, it's fine. It's fine. So I do want to wrap this up. I feel like we could talk a lot longer. We may come back and do this again, especially since you're right upstairs. But yeah, tell people how they can educate themselves and get involved. And
well, I just want to say thank you first. I really just sort of appreciate, I like newbies, you know, and I like when you, I've seen this sort of realization come over you and it's like, whoa, wait a minute, I thought I knew. So I really like to just empower you to share this information within your network, because I know that you probably hang out with some of the toughest men doing all the toughest stuff. And so sometimes even a man having this conversation is so much more powerful than us sharing our real life experiences with these kids and sharing the work that we do. So if anyone would like to really get involved with us, you can visit our website at youth-spark.org. We're also on social media as well that you can like us. And sometimes you got to just stick your big toe in. You don't have to go in and just say, let me go rescue all these kids or let me just figure this out. You just sort of decide who you are in your arena, because that is how we're going to really expand this issue. And just, again, having people that are brave enough to use their platform to do this means a lot. So you can step in and you'll learn all about the ways that you can get engaged with us at our website. And I really want to talk a little bit about like Demand Tracker.
It's just like the website. If you're engaged on the demand side of things.
Right.
Oh, yeah. If you want to know more about demands, we have a website called demandtracker.org. It's also on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and don't be scared. You can just go on it and look around. We have lots of links to research, information, statistics about the local market here in Georgia and nationally. And it's just a way to kind of learn a little bit more about sex buying in Georgia, especially for young people.
All right, cool. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
So there you are, folks. There it is. As I said, definitely not the lighter fare we've been bringing you in the past. Definitely some pretty serious stuff. But I'm really glad. I'm really glad I talked to those two. And we'd love to bring you more great content like this. It's awesome to have a laugh, as we do. And, talk about Beltline stuff or food or whatever you talked about so far. But yeah, man, let's get down. Let's get real. Let's talk about some real stuff. Got anybody you recommend? Just drop me a note. MattBDavis@iCloud.com. I would appreciate it. I'm also on Facebook and all the different various platforms as Matt B. Davis. I'm pretty easy to find. Yeah, let me know who else you want to see in the show. Either someone that you think could enlighten people, educate people, as today's guest did, or some more fun stuff like we've done before. Either way, please let me know. I'm super stoked to bring this to you. It's been a lot of fun just in our first, whatever we're at, first 2 months here, and we are just getting started. Okay, love you, miss you, mean it. I gotta run.